The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily radio show. It's already Friday, the last broadcast of the week. Glad that you are joining us. If you'd like to send us an email, do so by sending those remarks to td@kpcg.fm. Well, President Obama erases another red line. Another red line has been erased. It was just a couple of months ago. When the president, when I guess in an interview with a news outlet, said he was open to visiting Cuba sometime before leaving office, but that first he wanted to see more freedom for ordinary citizens there in Cuba. And without such progress, this is what he said in the interview. This is back in December. He said, what I've said to the Cuban government is if, this is in a print interview, so we don't have the clip. He says, if in fact, I with confidence can say that we're seeing some progress in the liberty and freedom and possibilities of ordinary Cubans, I'd love to use a visit as a way of highlighting that progress. So now, Sam, you can play the clip of what he said earlier this week, February 20th.
This week, we made it official. I'm going to Cuba. When Michelle and I go to Havana next month, it will be the first visit of a U.S. president to Cuba in nearly 90 years. And it builds on the decision I made more than a year ago to begin a new chapter in our relationship with the people of Cuba.
So that's what he announced. He's excitedly preparing to go in the next month. But the red line was that first there needed to be progress. And as we reported, I think it was the February 2nd, program earlier this month, if you want to go back and listen to that. But there's no progress being made. In fact, it's getting worse. Even the Washington Post has talked about this rapprochement with Cuba as being a total disaster. Failure in Cuba was the title of its editorial back on January 31st, just a few weeks ago. And this is the Washington Post editorial board saying that Mr. Obama continues to offer the Castro regime unilateral concessions, requiring nothing in return. He hasn't required anything in return, even though he said that if there was progress made, well, he could use a trip to highlight that progress. We talked in that program earlier this month about just the rise in the number of arbitrary arrests and detentions and such. It was climbing really all through 2015. Just in January of this year, the regime arrested 1,474 dissidents. That's the second highest month ever. 1,474 dissidents arrested by the Castro regime. According to the Cuban Observatory on Human Rights, the figures, speaking of the 1,474, the figures reflect only certain repressive actions and therefore do not express all the violations of various human rights that occur in Cuba. I mean, this is just one component. But they serve, it says, to demonstrate the lack of political will to change on the part of the Cuban government, which remains stuck in intolerance and immobility. It's just stuck. If anything, it's worse, as we wrote about in the Trumpet all through last year. We said, if you recall, and I know I went through this recently, that earlier February 2nd program, we said that this was a bad deal for the Cuban people. And it's dangerous for the United States. And it's revealing, isn't it? The deal, and now the trip. It says a lot about this administration and its view, its worldview. Charles Krauthammer had a a really important piece just today about the state of the world that we're in year 8 of the Obama presidency. And he ties in this Cuban visit toward the end. But first, in the first part of this column, he just gives you a rundown of what's going on in the South China Sea, for example. China installing those anti-aircraft batteries, stationing fighter jets, creating artificial islands, expanding its reach, building bases, and all of it's designed to, well, Krauthammer quotes this commander of the U.S. Pacific Command, who says China is clearly militarizing the South China Sea. Its goal is hegemony in East Asia. It wants the U.S. presence out. It's pushing the U.S. presence out. And then over in Syria, you know all about the chaos and turmoil and bloodshed going on, has been going on for years now. And how, because of Russia's recent intervention, the tide has turned in favor of the Assad regime. The Russians have just been relentlessly bombing, destroying all the rebel strongholds, all of the what used to be the U.S. allies in the region, the U.S.-backed resistance surrounding Aleppo, destroying that stronghold, that rebel stronghold. And the U.S. response, as Krauthammer brings out, has just been pathetic, so weak. Nothing but words. That's all that the U.S. does now. It just responds with words. Ukraine, Krauthammer says, having swallowed Crimea so thoroughly that no one even talks about it anymore, Russia continues to trample with impunity on the Minsk ceasefire agreements. Vladimir Putin is now again stirring the pot, intensifying the fighting, advancing his remorseless campaign to fracture and subordinate the Ukrainian state. Meanwhile, Obama still refuses to send the Ukrainians even defensive weapons. We won't even back our allies there. And so Russia just is having its way. And then Krauthammer highlights what's happening in Iran, how it's receiving all of these shipments now of anti-aircraft batteries, all of these combat aircraft, its $8 billion arms deal with Russia. It's going on a conventional weapons shopping spree, as Krauthammer notes. And all these blatant violations of strictures put upon it by the UN. And what's the U.S. response here again? It's just words. It's just words. Let me take you to what James Clapper testified about Iran. This is from a testimony before lawmakers earlier this month.
Iran continues to be the foremost state sponsor of terrorism and exert its influence in regional crises in the Mideast through the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps Quds Force, its terrorist partner Lebanese Hezbollah, and proxy groups. Iran and Hezbollah remain a continuing terrorist threat to U.S. interests and partners worldwide. Iran probably views the JCPOA as a means to remove sanctions while preserving nuclear capabilities. Iran's perception of how the JCPOA helps it achieve its overall strategic goals will dictate the level of its adherence to the agreement over time. Iran deepened its involvement in the Syrian, Iraq, and Yemeni conflicts in 2015. It also increased military cooperation with Russia, highlighted by its battlefield alliance in Syria in support of the regime. Iran's supreme leader continues to view the United States as a major threat. We assess that his views will not change despite the implementation of the JCPOA deal, the exchange of detainees, and the release of the 10 sailors.
we assess that his views won't change. I mean, that's the director of national intelligence, okay? That's the director of national intelligence. Just giving the facts. Iran still hates us. They're in the midst of a shopping spree with all of the money we gave them. Krauthammer says, three major have-not powers are seeking to overturn the post-Cold War status quo. Russia in Eastern Europe, China in East Asia, Iran in the Middle East, all are on the march. He says, to say nothing of the Islamic State now extending its reach from Afghanistan to West Africa. The international order built over decades by the United States is crumbling. See, that's what we need to wrap our minds around. Just how this decades-long order is collapsing before our eyes. In the face of this, what does President Obama do? Krauthammer says he goes to Cuba. Yes, Cuba. Amid global disarray and American decline, President Obama sticks to his cherished concerns. Cuba, Guantanamo, and of course, climate change. They're sticking with their cherished concerns right through to the end of this term. And meanwhile, as Krauthammer effectively brings out, the world is burning. The world is in disarray. The world order of the past several decades is crumbling. He says, why not go to Havana? Sure, the barbarians are at the gates and pushing hard, knowing they will enjoy but 11 more months of minimal American resistance. But our passive president genuinely believes that such advances don't really matter, that these disruptors are so on the wrong side of history, that their reaches for territory, power, victory are so 20th century. They're so on the wrong side of history. Don't they know this? It says, of course, it mattered greatly to the 250,000 slaughtered in Syria and the millions more exiled. It feels all quite real to a dissolving Europe, an expanding China, a rising Iran, a metastasizing jihadism. But not to the visionary Obama, however. He sees far beyond such ephemera. He knows what really matters. Climate change, Gitmo, and Cuba. Krauthammer concludes, with time running out, he wants those to be his legacy. Indeed, they will be. I mean, that will be his legacy. That's what he wants. That's what's important to him. That's what's important to his administration. And so it doesn't matter what happens in the world. Those cherished items on the agenda, it's as if that's all that matters. And in fact, as the world burns, you'll have members of his administration out there talking about just how wonderful the world is today. Remember this one. This is from January 22nd, 2016. It's Secretary of State John Kerry.
But the fact is, change is occurring in our world for the better. And it is occurring faster, moving faster than perhaps ever before. My friends, the region is safer. The world is safer. So, ladies and gentlemen, the world is not witnessing global gridlock. We are not frozen in a nightmare that we can't wake up from. The facts and the lessons are clear. If we stay at it, if we stay serious, if we're willing to work in good faith to resolve problems, not create them, then we can make progress. This is the shared mission of our generation. Less to make history than to calm history. to create the largest possible oasis of time about which no future war movies will be made, no epic battle diaries kept, no genocide memorials needed, a time of quiet building and the peaceful pursuit of a rewarding life. That is a task in which we can all have a stake and in which we actually can all play a role. And I hope it will inspire all of us to take more steps, hopefully giant steps, to define a future of decency and peace.
That's the soundbite, by the way, that one of our listeners said we needed to play every couple months. And so there you go. The world is getting better. The region is safer. Europe is safer. The Middle East is safer. The world is safer. We're not witnessing any kind of global gridlock. There's no nightmarish conditions on this earth today. That's the world that they see. Peace, peace, when there is no peace. That's what they're out there saying. They're out there glossing over all of these problems, all of these nightmares. And it's like Krauthammer said at the end of his article, well, but what about the quarter million that have been slaughtered? What about the millions that have been exiled? What about the dissolving union in Europe? China's expansion, the rise of Iran, the spread of jihadism. And in the midst of all this, there's the trip to Cuba. The trip to Cuba to show the world the progress, to highlight the progress in Cuba. It's been a total disaster. It's been a total failure. We've empowered the Castro regime. They're emboldened by this rapprochement. They're emboldened to arrest more dissidents, to put more people in prison. And it's the same with Iran. It's the same with any of these regions. You heard it from Mr. Clapper in his testimony in early February, February 9th. Here's the director of National Intelligence warning us about all of these regional hotspots, warning us of the dangers. And yet you still have so many who are out there glossing over these terrible conditions, pretending they're not there when they are. But like one translation of Jeremiah 6:14 says, you can't heal a wound by saying it's not there. You can't heal a wound by pretending it's not really there. So many of the greatest minds of our day, you have to put that in quotes, they're under the illusion that human nature is getting better, that the world conditions are improving. And it's exactly the opposite, as it says in 2 Timothy 3 and other passages as well. The world burns, and yet this administration holds on to its most cherished items on the to-do list, on its agenda. Krauthammer mentioned the closing of Gitmo. That was another big announcement made this week. This is what the president said just the other day.
I don't want to pass this problem on to the next president, whoever it is. And if, as a nation, we don't deal with this now, when will we deal with it? Are we going to let this linger on for another 15 years, another 20 years, another 30 years? If we don't do what's required now, I think future generations are going to look back and ask why we failed to act when the right course, the right side of history and of justice and our best American traditions was clear.
Well, that's regarding Guantanamo Bay. and his efforts to close it down. That's something he wanted to do from the very beginning. Of course, he's faced strong opposition from both parties in Congress. The Associated Press said this week, 14 years after the facility opened and 7 years after Obama took office, the president argued it was finally time to shutter a facility that has sparked persistent legal battles, become a recruitment tool for Islamic militants. This is according to the AP, the liberal organization, and garnered strong opposition from allies abroad. Under the plan, roughly 35 of the 91 current detainees will be transferred to other countries in the coming months, leaving up to 60 detainees who are either facing trial by military commission or have been determined to be too dangerous to release, but are not facing charges. So he's trying to get rid of these guys so he can shut everything down. Here's what it says in the Wall Street Journal. It's not going to happen, at least not if Mr. Obama follows the law. Polls show that the American people oppose closing Gitmo by about 2-1. Politicians in both parties oppose closing it. And the past 7 years have taught that the camp plays an important role in keeping America safe. It has an important role to play in keeping America safe. We know this because so many detainees released by the Bush and Obama administrations have returned to the battlefield. They've returned to the battlefield. The director of national intelligence, it says that of the 653 detainees transferred out of Gitmo through July 2015, 117 are confirmed to have re-engaged as terrorists. Another 79 are suspected of re-engaging. Most of the remaining 91 are the worst of the worst, and 46 aren't even recommended for transfer. So we've tried to let as many go as possible already. And the ones left, they are the worst of the worst. And if 15 or 20% of them are already returning to the battlefield, that's from the Director of National Intelligence. How is this going to make America safer? John Kerry just had a testimony this week. A ridiculous exchange between him and one of the lawmakers who talked about one of these released from Gitmo, how that they've returned to the battlefield and that they're now making recruitment or appearing in recruitment videos for jihadists. Listen to this exchange.
Let me just ask one question. I want to show you a picture of Ibrahim al-Khorsi, who was recently released by the administration to the Sudanese, and he appeared on some al-Qaeda videos recruiting people for AQIP. Guys, hold them up.
Thank you.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, you may not want to be in that photo, but...
I would just say, now that he's out, I would hope we would end the policy of issuing terrorists to terrorist nations and where they can get out.
Well, Senator, he's not supposed to be doing that, and there are consequences for that, and there will be. But apart from that, the fact is that we've got people who've been held without charges for 13 years, 14 years in some cases. That's not American. That's not how we operate.
He shouldn't be doing that, that guy, that Ibrahim. He's not supposed to do that. We let him go, and now he's recruiting others. And he's one of at least 117, perhaps closer to 200, that have reengaged. And so, I mean, the response is, it's un-American to keep them there. It's un-American to take these terrorists and to hold them captive for the safety of the United States. here in this particular case, he's let go, and he was given to Sudan. To Sudan. And the congressman there, I'm not sure what his name is, he was saying, I hope with this latest example, that at least we'll not release terrorists to terrorist-sponsoring nations. He settled in Sudan, then found his way to Yemen. And then, lo and behold, he starts making appearances in the recruitment videos. He's the face of Al-Qaeda now. He was a close confidant to Osama bin Laden and let go. And now he's back working to kill as many Americans as possible and other Westerners. Quoting again from that Wall Street Journal piece, it's possible that Mr. Obama's Tuesday plan is merely one more political setup, that what he really intends to that what he really intends is to issue another executive order closing Guantanamo if Congress won't go along with his proposals. On Tuesday, the president didn't threaten such an action, but he also didn't rule it out. And so, like with so many other stories we've been discussing recently, this is going to be an interesting year. If we have time later, we'll come back to the appointment of Justice Scalia's replacement, the nomination that's sure to come here in a few weeks, perhaps sooner, perhaps a little bit later. In any event, he's getting a lot of pushback, the president is, from Congress over shutting down Guantanamo. And as the Wall Street Journal brings out, he won't be able to do it if he abides by the law. But what if he takes executive action? What if he takes matters into his own hands? We'll have to see how this plays out. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show on KPCG 101.3 on the FM dial in Edmond, Oklahoma, our headquarters campus. This broadcast comes to you from Edstone, our campus in the beautiful Midlands region of the UK. You can get the live stream at thetrumpet.com, the website, and also KPCG, either of those websites. Send us those emails this weekend. Send them to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Are we living in the last days? Some dismiss the notion as fanatical, but world leaders and news analysts are issuing warnings that are becoming more and more dire. Could Bible prophecies about the last days actually be accurate? Our brochure can help guide you through the relevant news and history and help you compare these events to what the Bible says. Are we living in the last days? This brochure is available for free right now at thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
I played one clip for you already from James Clapper, the Director of National Intelligence, a clip about the Iranian threat. Here's one more clip from that February 9th testimony.
As I said last year, unpredictable instability has become the new normal, and this trend will continue for the foreseeable future. Violent extremists are operationally active in about 40 countries. 7 countries are experiencing a collapse of central government authority. 14 others face regime-threatening or violent instability, or both. Another 59 countries face a significant risk of instability through 2016. The record level of migrants, more than 1 million, arriving in Europe is likely to grow further this year. Migration and displacement will strain countries in Europe, Asia, Africa, and the Americas. There are now some 60 million people who are considered displaced globally. Extreme weather, climate change, environmental degradation, rising demand for food and water, poor policy decisions, and inadequate infrastructure will magnify this instability. Infectious diseases and vulnerabilities in the global supply chain for medical countermeasures will continue to pose threats.
That's James Clapper, the director of National Intelligence, in his testimony before lawmakers, February 9th, talking about the trends that will continue for the foreseeable future. Violent extremism, operationally active in 40 countries. He said seven countries are experiencing a collapse of central government authority. It brings to mind what Herbert Armstrong said there toward the end of his life. This was back in the 80s when he talked about a government collapsing on Earth somewhere nearly every month. 14 others have faced regime threatening or violent instability, or both. Another 59 countries face a significant risk of instability through 2016. That's America's Director of National Intelligence. It's surprising in one sense that he still has a job, given the kinds of comments and statements that you hear coming from others in the administration. In fact, I remember, I don't have the article with me, but there was a piece in one of the publications here in the UK that was just making fun of Clapper's testimony. That, well, he was just going on and on about all these problems. You talk about a Jeremiah, someone who's talking about all these evils, all these problems, all these threats. So many just would rather not talk about it. In my class this week at the college, I came upon this section from the old Ambassador College Bible correspondence course, just talking about these many prophecies of God and how dangerous this knowledge is for so many, I mean, that receive the warning and then just go and bury their heads in the sand. Or perhaps they know that this is God's work and that this is the truth, but they don't do anything with it. They don't act on it. You think about that testimony from Clapper. You think about some of the other headlines we've discussed even here today. And then think about those scriptures, 2 Timothy 3, about evil men and seducers growing worse and worse and worse. What Jesus Christ said there in Matthew 24 about all these events building to great tribulation. The prophet Daniel said at the time of the end, it would be a time of trouble such as never was since there was a nation. That's what we're heading into. Indeed, we're already there for so many. It's going to get much worse. But 40 countries where violent extremists are operationally active? 40 nations? Governments collapsing? Refugees by the millions? Migration and displacement will strain countries in Europe, Asia, Africa, and the Americas. That's what's coming. 60 million people on Earth today displaced. Weather upsets. You throw some of those into the mix. Earthquakes, floods. Here again, it's not that we're just highlighting the negative. We're just giving you what the Bible has prophesied. I mean, you read through Matthew 24. You read through Jesus Christ's testimony in that chapter. And it's an eye-opener. It should be. It certainly should be. But, well, for many, still, there's just not the motivation, the zeal, the desire to really do something with this knowledge. As I said, this section stood out to me from an old Ambassador College correspondence course lesson. This dangerous knowledge, how the events that are prophesied should really cause us to sit up and take note, to dig into the Bible, and to do what God says we should do with this knowledge. This lesson says, we frankly doubt, though, whether all of you fully grasp the dangerous knowledge that you have learned from your own Bibles through this course. We want to impress on you the seriousness of knowing what the future holds. You have no excuse whenever you fail to act upon God's warnings, because you now know what God plans to do. There's no excuse for not acting. You know what to do. But, as that lesson brings out, well, we frankly doubt whether all of you fully grasp the dangerous knowledge that you have learned. In this lesson, later on in the lesson here, it says, in this lesson of the correspondence course, you're going to learn, perhaps for the first time, that God once before intervened in world affairs by unleashing the powers of nature. The nations of that time were terrified. They recognized the power of the Creator. They recorded the frightful events which they saw take place. Just as the Israelites recorded in Scripture these same mighty works, the signs, the wonders which God performed in what to us seems the dim past. Let's look over at 2 Peter chapter 3. Just take a look at a couple of verses here. 2 Peter 3. This is the Apostle Peter writing about the last days. He says, knowing this, verse 3 of chapter 3, knowing this first, that there shall come in the last days scoffers, walking after their own lusts and saying, where is the promise of his coming? For since the fathers fell asleep, all things continue as they were from the beginning of the creation. Everything just continues along. It's always been like this. Millions displaced, wars, governments collapsing. It's always been like this. I got into this yesterday. I can't remember if it was for the program here or in a lecture I gave for the college. Those that would say, well, human nature's always been this way. Mr. Armstrong said in Missing Dimension and Sex, don't be fooled. Don't be fooled. Human nature is the same, but look at how the technology, as we went through yesterday, look at how it's making it so much easier for evil to spread. I mean, we talked about it with respect to morals mostly yesterday, but look at what terrorist organizations are doing with the technology, with social media, with recruitment tools. And to say that Guantanamo is helping them make recruits, they're out there using these former prisoners, using social media, using Facebook. You talk about tools for recruitment. Is it going to be curtailed? Is it going to fix itself eventually? Will they just die out? Will jihadism just die out? It's intensifying. It's spreading. And advances in technology is just making it easier for it to spread faster. This lesson here says, it may seem strange to you to learn that there is abundant proof that what God recorded in His Holy Bible is happening actually did happen. It's talking about what happened in the days leading up to the flood. Peter draws attention to that here. Jude did. Jesus Christ did. And yet we carry on and pretend that those things never happened. And we make fun of the Bible. We make fun of Bible prophecy. We think that those who are into prophecy are kooky. They're strange. They're way out there. God's laid it out there for us. God's given us all the detail. And so many of these prophecies that we've talked about on this program, they're being fulfilled. It's amazing. It all builds, of course, to the return of Jesus Christ. We can thank God for that. There is a solution. There is a time limit that God puts upon the devil's reign. There's a time limit. He knows. Study this for yourself in Revelation 12. He knows how short time is. Do you know? We should know. We've been given all of this knowledge, dangerous knowledge. And so many of these things have happened before. I mean, history's repeating itself. This lesson says God's verbal warnings, his spoken warnings, have been made known to man for thousands of years through the Holy Bible. But God seems so far distant to most people. He seems insignificant. Whatever he might say, it is reasoned, could not change the course of world events. What folly, this lesson says. What ignorance of the power and the authority of the Almighty. But you see a lot of it, don't you? A lot of ignorance, a lot of folly, a lot of blindness. God will intervene with a strong hand. He will intervene in the affairs of men. He's doing it already. He's doing it for this work. He's delivering his message. He's reaching out to this dying world to give them a message of hope, to help them see that while many may scoff, you can actually grab hold of the truth that will set you free, as Jesus said, and you can make use of it and act on this knowledge, this precious knowledge, and come out of this world and come out of the evil and become a child of God. It's all happened before, these prophecies, as this lesson brings out. History's repeating itself. Even more recently, if you look at recent history, the sixth resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire and all of the death and the destruction that that brought on the earth, that was just 75 years ago, not even a century ago. And now look at the world we live in today. Let me just play that clip from Clapper again as we conclude this segment. This is from his February 9th testimony.
As I said last year, unpredictable instability has become the new normal, and this trend will continue for the foreseeable future. Violent extremists are operationally active in about 40 countries. Seven countries are experiencing a collapse of central government authority. 14 others face regime-threatening or violent instability or both. Another 59 countries face a significant risk of instability through 2016. The record level of migrants, more than 1 million, arriving in Europe is likely to grow further this year. Migration and displacement will strain countries in Europe, Asia, Africa, and the Americas. There are now some 60 million people who are considered displaced globally. Extreme weather, climate change, environmental degradation, rising demand for food and water, poor policy decisions, and inadequate infrastructure will magnify this instability. Infectious diseases and vulnerabilities in the global supply chain for medical countermeasures will continue to pose threats.
The Trumpet Daily.
For an easy-to-read, information-rich news brief, join the growing readership of The Trumpet Weekly. Now you can enjoy all the top news stories from the previous week condensed into a report combining the commentary, analysis, and reporting you've come to expect from thetrumpet.com sent directly to your email. Subscribing is completely free. Simply visit the Trumpet Weekly section of thetrumpet.com to subscribe by email today.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Well, President Obama has been pretty active this week, as you've heard already on today's show. He posted a blog posting at SCOTUS blog, it's called, talking about a responsibility that he takes very seriously, that of nominating someone to succeed Antonin Scalia there at the Supreme Court. And he said all the things that he was supposed to say in the first part of the blog or the post about appointing someone that understands that it's his job to not make law, but to help interpret it. But then he gets to this. He says, but I'm also mindful that there will be cases that reach the Supreme Court in which the law is not clear. Uh-oh, so what happens if the law is not clear? There will be cases, he says, in which a judge's analysis necessarily will be shaped by his or her own perspective, ethics, and judgment. That's why the third quality I seek in a judge is a keen understanding that justice is not about abstract legal theory, nor some footnote in the dusty casebook. It's the kind of life experience earned outside the classroom and the courtroom, experience that suggests he or she views the law not only as an intellectual exercise, but also grasp the way it affects the daily reality of people's lives in a big, complicated democracy and in rapidly changing times. He says that, I believe, is an essential element for arriving at just decisions and fair outcomes. It's similar to some of what he said and wrote about those previous justices that he's nominated. How does life experience decide a case, perhaps involving religious freedom or some other right or freedom that we enjoy because of the Constitution? How does life experience or personal ethics as a judge, how does that impact your ability to read what the law says, to read a statute, to interpret a statute? Well, we know from recent history what kind of justice he's looking for. It's one that understands that the Constitution is a living, breathing document, as they say. One that needs to be modernized. One that needs to take into account that times are changing. That we've got to be flexible. And that you've got to put flexibility into the Constitution. Well, already, I guess he's floated the idea, I forget the name of the governor, a fairly liberal Republican governor that was formerly a judge. That's being put out there as a possibility. But who knows how this will play out. Again, it just adds to what's already been an incredible year in terms of prophetic events and seeing just how fast things are moving along. I thought I'd conclude here with something a little bit lighter. It does, I think, in some ways, it illustrates a pretty profound point, a weakness that you see, not just in one particular administration, but really a weakness you see all across the world of not understanding the real significant events. I mean, Mr. Clapper laid it out there pretty clearly. But most people don't listen to that sort of thing. Or if they do, they make fun of it. And meanwhile, you have other stories like the one with Cecil the Lion last year. You'll remember this. I got probably more hateful email on this one story than anything else we've discussed this past year. You know the story about this lion that was killed by a big game hunter. The dentist from Minnesota, I think it was, And the fury, not just in social media, but those that came out and surrounded his place of practice, his business. He had to shut it down for weeks. Well, I guess, what was it, Zimbabwe? Is that where the hunting was? I forget. The nation dropped the charges, basically, on this dentist. And so Fox News has somewhat of an update on what's happened since Cecil the Lion, or Cecil, I guess, the Lion, was killed a number of months ago. It says here, the international backlash against big game hunters triggered by last year's killing of a beloved lion named Cecil could spell doom for hundreds of beasts who now roam a Zimbabwe preserve. The deafening criticism after Cecil's death in July has created a chilling effect among many in the industry, leading to more hunters staying home, animal populations growing out of control, and a more dangerous environment for guides, say experts. So here's the outcome. After this outcry, after this furor, far fewer hunters are going to Zimbabwe, quotes this guy as saying. One Zimbabwean conservancy floated the idea of culling nearly 200 of its lions to fight overpopulation. That notion, since tabled, has drawn condemnation, but it highlights the desperation from conservancies face as lion and other animal populations go unchecked. So now there's so many lions that it's becoming dangerous for the locals. It's becoming dangerous for those who are out there leading expeditions or safaris or whatever it is. There's a case later. I don't know where it is right offhand. I think it's toward the end of the article. It talks about this one guide, a well-beloved guide, a real professional who's taken so many people out into the wild. He was mauled to death just recently, and many have speculated that he didn't shoot the lion because of his career would have been ruined had he done that. It quotes later, we were all talking about it. If you shoot a lion, your career's over, said Taylor, who believes Swales may have been reluctant to shoot the beast for fear of public reprisal. This guy was a really successful guide, and he died by a lion. And I think that's the Cecil effect. And that's the title of the article, The Cecil Effect. It's now dangerous for guides. It's now more dangerous for the locals. And so, like with so many stories that you see make headlines, I mean, what the real outcry should be over, there's nothing. There's nothing. And then the facts don't matter. You could get to the rest of the facts. You could talk about them till you're blue in the face. But it doesn't get in the way of those cherished points on the agenda. I mean, that's all that matters. Those things that are near and dear to our hearts, what we really care about. I mean, that's what I'll shout about. That's what I'll get really excited over. The facts on the ground, what's actually happening in Zimbabwe, what's actually happening in Syria or in China or in the South China Sea or in Europe with the refugees or in Iran or in Cuba. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. The world isn't as it is. It's as we see it. It's as we hope it to be. It's really amazing. And it just goes back to the point I made in the previous segment. With respect to you and your responsibility, how do you handle this knowledge? What do you do with it? We really have to dig in and get the facts as God presents them to us. And then really do something with this knowledge. Do something with it. I mean, so many of these events that we talk about on this program, these prophecies being fulfilled, so many of them, it's happened before. It's happened once before, like that correspondence lesson says. Dangerous knowledge, for sure. Well, again, we don't want to make light of mistreating animals or anything like that, but look at the real story. There's always more to the story. Look at the facts. Look at what's happening in this world. Look at the chaos. Look at the breakdown. Look at the disorder. Look at how dramatic and fast the changes are happening. It's exciting, though. Again, when you understand and know what it builds toward, you know from Revelation 12 and many other passages, there's a time limit on all of this. Satan knows he's running out of time. That's why the world is the way it is. He knows he's about out of time. He knows that Jesus Christ will soon return to this earth and set up the kingdom of God on this earth. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show as we put the finishing touches on another week of broadcasting here on KPCG 101.3 on the FM dial in Edmond, Oklahoma. The live stream you can get at thetrumpet.com and also kpcg.fm. Don't forget to send us your emails through the weekend. Send those to td@kpcg.fm. Thanks for joining us today and this week, and we'll see you next week.